the Agile brand.
Welcome to the B2B Agility Podcast, where we look at the factors that drive success in B2B marketing, with a focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make B2B brands stand out and thrive in a competitive marketplace. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Today, we're going to talk about what it takes to build a memorable B2B brand, creating new categories in established industries, and the latest trends in demand generation amidst increased automation, demands for self-service tools, and more. To help me discuss these topics, I'd like to welcome Kristen Russell, Chief Marketing Officer at Simpler. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Greg. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Looking forward to talking about this. Several topics here with you today. So why don't we get started, though, with you giving a little background on yourself as well as your current role at Simpler.
Perfect. Absolutely. So I am actually the Chief Marketing Officer at Simpler. I'll start with me and then I'll get into Simpler in just a hot minute here. I've been in this B2B marketing space probably for about 20 years, maybe even a little less. I've actually been in healthcare longer than that, with strategy, with work, M&A. My career started, though, in a very untraditional route relative to marketing, and that was more on a corporate finance tangent. And then, like you, actually, I was a consultant who then moved into M&A, happened to buy a company that needed some support on the marketing side. And to be honest, I dipped my toes in the water and I never left. It is my happy place.
Nice. That's great.
And then with regards to Simpler, so Simpler itself, not everybody's heard of us, as probably similar with a lot of B2B brands. We are in the healthcare technology space and we really service healthcare workers. So think about all of the nurses, the clinicians, the people who ultimately take care of our patients. And we do everything we can to make the operations that they manage as easy and straightforward as possible. So we talk a lot about this space called healthcare operations, and we bring end-to-end services for healthcare workers so they can do their staffing, their scheduling, provider data management, compliance, safety, quality. We sort of handle all of those different areas within that healthcare operations space. Simpler's in 9 out of 10 hospitals today. We're growing by leaps and bounds, a little bit of a unicorn and a standout in technology overall, but we're really excited about this opportunity. We feel like we've sort of, and we're going to talk about this later, but we feel like we've sort of fallen into a place where innovation is really needed and our customers are really rewarding that with a lot of growth on our end.
Yeah. Great. No, thanks for that background. And maybe a topic for a different episode, but I am curious about the your background in finance and how that translates into, you know, the way you think about marketing. So maybe we'll have you back on the show and we can talk about that as well. But definitely have plenty to talk about today. And so, you know, wanted to start with this, and you know, a lot of companies start with a great idea. You know, many have great products, but far fewer are able to truly stand out from the crowd. You know, let's start by talking about how we stand out in the marketplace. And, you know, with so much competition for many B2B brands, where should a CMO start when thinking about building a memorable brand that really stands out?
It's, first of all, that is a great question. And if I pretended like, if at any point in this conversation, you think, wow, she's got all the answers, we should probably take a step back and think about this. It is a continuous learning journey. I do think about and kind of ground ourselves, though, here at Simpler in a couple of concepts, and 3 in particular that I think about in terms of how do I help this brand really stand out. Number 1 is the brand itself. And I just, the good old common sense approach that if a buyer cannot remember your brand, they can't search for it, they can't talk about it, and ultimately they can't buy it.
Yeah.
So that notion around branding matters is really important in the way that we think about how our messages, how our creative, how our work really resonates across, at least in our target market. So that's number one. I also think the second component that's really a kind of a fast follower to branding matter, branding being important, is that creative quality also has to be considered. And to me, creative quality is probably the biggest influence on ultimately our marketing effectiveness. And so even though we're in B2B, where traditionally there's sort of like, is creative that important? You know, I think the bottom line is if your creative is memorable, if it grabs the attention of your target audience, you're going to stand out and you're going to have a better chance of kind of capturing the eyes and ears of your audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then the third component that I also think about with B2B brands is the fact that not everyone is in the market and ready to buy. Only about 5% of the market is buying at any point in time. And so because of that, the branding, the creative, being able to stand out at the point when that buyer is ready to engage is really equally important.
Yeah, no, great points there. What about the relationship between sales and marketing, and you know, how does this factor in? Obviously, there's certainly some unique dynamics with sales and marketing in the B2B space, as well as just, you know, in how salespeople talk about the brand versus marketing talking about the brand. So, you know, where can sales help, and you know, where should maybe marketing take the lead?
You know, I think the relationship with sales is critical. It's like a good marriage. Actually, I have a weekly one-on-one with our head of sales, just had it this morning, right before this call. You know, I think one of the things that I feel is really important, and even just having the relationship, is having skin in the game. You know, and I think there's an opportunity for a lot of marketers to sort of say, hey, I'm helping, I'm here with brand, I'm here with my leads. We put the skin in the game. And what I mean by that is we've got shared goals within marketing. We measure not just the pipeline we're creating, but how much of our pipeline is closing. You know, are we able to create pipeline that goes all the way to the end and make that a real conversation? But the point is that I will also make, and that's back to what I was talking about before, this branding piece. You know, I think that brand does create, and we need it to create, compounding value over the entire life cycle of the customer journey. So even though sales is going to be engaged in sort of a moment, that moment at which that you're really ready to have a conversation and buy the thing that whoever's selling, the relationship, the ongoing relationship that the brand has with the customer is really, really important. And I think that's the part where maybe sales and marketing sort of diverge a little bit, because the sales team is just so critically important just at that moment of sale.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. So in your roles, you've successfully been part of creating new categories and established industries. Wanted to talk a little bit about this. And, you know, so in your experience, what are the signs or signals that there is an opportunity, that, you know, that there's an opening here? You know, a lot of people look at an established industry and say, oh, okay, well, you know, that's been done, or it's saturated or whatever. But, you know, what can someone be looking for as far as that opening, that there may be an opportunity to do something new with there?
Yeah. I mean, so creating a category, and this is something we've done. So a simpler, you know, this healthcare technology company, we come into the kind of the healthcare technology space, and I'll tell you a little bit about our story, and I promise I'm going to answer your question because you really connect. But as Simpler started, and we had, you know, a focus on kind of credentialing and supporting the credentialing cycle for vendors and then moving into providers. But we quickly realized that the technology we were providing to our customers, it didn't have a name for all the stuff that we were doing. And what we found in talking with our primary buyer, our chief information officers of hospitals, was that they had a category of dollars that they allocated to what we call their electronic health records, the things that run the hospitals, they had a category of dollars for ERP systems and sort of the larger pieces of what you would need to connect and get paid, if you will. But then they had all this other stuff. And in fact, the CIOs called it the other budget. And so as you're talking to your customers, you're figuring out, holy cow, in my focus groups, it's like, I can't exactly say, hey, listen, we're leading in the other budget. Like, I've got everything you need to satisfy all your needs in the other budget. And so we wanted to give a name, and we needed a way to talk about how we could support this space that the CIOs were managing. And in our world, we called it healthcare operations. And I'll tell you, when you first start creating a category, you run into all kinds of issues. When you're creating a new category in an established industry, you want to think about a couple of different things to really help sort of cement the category creation. In our world, I had, you know, I looked at and read a lot about category creation. And there were three things that I had read that are kind of important to basically be able to say you've created a category. And so ironically, turning it on its head, those are the three things we went after. One was if you have analysts talking about you or about the category, okay, that's a big check on, well done, you've created a category. Yeah. If you have jobs and people who work with the category name. So in our world, healthcare operations analyst, healthcare operations workforce managers, those become really important kind of a notion around category creation. And then the third one is, you know, it's competition starting to use that category name in their marketing and how they're going to market. And So in our world, as we started the process of creating a category, it was with an eye towards, hey, let's get the analysts on board. Let's make sure we've got them kind of really buttoned up and helping us manage this. Let's work with our HR team, with our professional services, our services team, as we're rolling out products and to help create this space, this healthcare operations space, and to train our customers to be healthcare operations analysts. And then, you know, the competition, I didn't have to do much to, we just sort of waited and they came along. More than anything, was trying to keep those guys at bay as long as possible.
To all the B2B marketers out there, the B2B Marcom Summit is the region's largest annual gathering of B2B marketing, advertising, PR, communications, and media professionals. It brings together professionals from brands, professional services firms, tech companies, and more to discuss industry trends, best practices, and challenges, all focused on B2B. The B2B Marcom Summit will take place May 23, 2024 in Reston, Virginia, in the Washington, D.C. metro area, and just a few minutes from the Dulles Airport. I can't wait to join you there. Register today at b2bsummit.co, that's b2bsummit.co, and use the code AGILE15 for 15% off your registration fee. Before we get back to the show, I just wanted to remind you to hit the follow or subscribe button on your app to make sure you get notified when new episodes of this show are available. Now let's get back to the show.
So I'm going to ask the inverse question here and for a reason. So, you know, some of your answer may be similar, but, you know, having gone through, you know, I went through a startup incubator, read plenty of books on, you know, how to, you know, be successful in startups and things like that. And, you know, one of those recommendations is to try to find a category and define a category and everything. And yet knowing, you know, it sounds like you had a great opportunity and capitalized on it and everything, but, you know, is creating a new category always the right answer? Or, you know, are there times when it's just not the right fit and I guess, how would you know? Again, kind of the inverse question to what I just asked, but how do you know when it may not be the right fit?
You know, I'll be honest, creating a category is extremely expensive. It takes time, it takes energy, and it takes that time and energy away from marketing the actual thing that you're trying to market. And so, no, I don't think category creation is always the right answer. I think you've got to make sure that you've got enough girth, if you will, to create a category. And I think the challenge you bring up of startups where you don't have a very big budget, you've got a lot of different things that you're trying to achieve. And if you're trying to create a category, that becomes very, very challenging.
Yeah.
I think you've got to allocate for the time it's going to take to educate the analysts, to spend time with the analysts, and it's a multitude of different analysts. You're playing them back and forth. You're helping them understand, hey, this is why this category is needed. Because if the analysts will come on board and start kind of grabbing onto the category notion, then that's when you really start to create the magic. Because now all of a sudden, there are summits, there are symposiums, there's white papers on your category. And if you do it well, the points that they're talking about that are needed for success in our world for healthcare operations, the points that the analysts talk about with regards to what you need to be successful to drive efficiency, to manage your workforce effectively, those are areas where our solutions line up directly with those points. And it's no mistake that we've educated the analysts appropriately to do that. But I will say, if you don't have to, if you can be a fast follower, that's not a bad spot to be as well. There's a great book called Steal Like an Artist, which I love that. It's like a little kid's book almost, but it's just super fast read. But, you know, taking from that and literally copying what the competition's doing and just fast following and then driving around kind of the edges. I mean, gosh, that's how Google got their success.
Right,
you know, there are huge companies that have done extremely well fast following.
Yeah, yeah. So last topic I want to talk about with you is, you know, generating demand in B2B markets and what's required for success. So certainly well within your purview here. So, you know, from what I hear from the B2B marketers I talk with, B2B marketing in some ways is looking more and more like B2C marketing in at least some ways. You know, how have you seen this shift over the last few years? And how does it affect the way you and your teams approach marketing?
I love this question, Greg, because, and hopefully my teams listen to this, we are hammering right now on this notion of business to human. And in fact, That's kind of what a lot of our 2024 go-to-market is all about. And it's recognizing that the people that are engaging with our marketing content, it's you, it's me, it's people who, you know, have day jobs, but also go home at night and hang out with kids. And we don't look like superstar models. We've got, you know, acne and gray hair and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And so we are really working to connect to the human and talk with, not at, but talk with the humans that are part of the businesses that we want to work with. And so that's kind of an important shift. And I'm seeing that from my peers as well. I think most B2B marketers these days are really trying to think about how do I better connect. And my own team, I will tell you, if I see like baby blue images of doctors holding iPads, all kind of staring together, like that is the traditional healthcare B2B marketing approach. And it doesn't resonate. Everyone's seen it. You sort of flip past that. So I think standing out is really important. Taking a nod from the work that our B2C components have done is critical to success in B2B. The other thing we think about is a lot of times in B2B, you don't have, nor do you need the dollars to build a massive brand. Like I'm not marketing. I don't have to do a spray and pray. I can be pretty pointed in who I'm marketing to, which means that I can be a little bit more tactical. And another CMO friend of mine uses the term brandquisition. I love that term. And it's this notion of doing brand marketing while I'm driving acquisition behaviors in my marketing outreach. So taking that digital work, the digital paid, even the unpaid, that approach from B2C, the acquisition tactics from B2C, but overlaying them as well with really heavy brand marketing to drive awareness in those very core pointed audiences that we're trying to gain attention in.
Yeah, yeah. I love the business to human, by the way. That's because that's talked a little bit about, you know, just how, I mean, we're all consumers when we, you know, when we're off work, right? So it's interesting how, you know, that shift is playing. You know, another thing that certainly it's hard to escape talking about AI and, you know, in its various guises. And certainly, you know, over the last year or so, I would say many, if not most businesses have at least experimented with some forms of, you know, whether it's automation or predictive or generative. What role has increased automation, AI, you know, other kind of flavors of AI played in demand generation over the last year and a half?
I mean, I think it's tectonic, the impact that AI has had in our industry in particular. The way that we're looking at it with regards to our tools, to how we build our content, to how we target, is like it's a massive shift, even from probably where we were about 2 years ago. You know, internally, we have AI initiatives to think about how our people are using AI within the marketing team. We're using it in everything from literally the blogs we write, the content we generate, to all the way out to the demand generation and outreach tools that my BDR team is using. And then for ourselves, I mean, for Simplr, we're thinking about it in terms of the same efficiency that I'm looking to gain for my marketing team, how can I leverage AI for my customers in the products that we're building and drive levels of efficiency and cost savings for them as well?
Yeah, it's
you know, across the board, it's a huge topic. I'm part of a CMO group, CMO huddles. We get together and I'm pretty sure it comes up in every single conversation.
I believe it. Yeah.
There's just a lot there. And the challenge on the flip side is there's a lot coming at me. And I'm sure a lot of the other CMOs on this call will, you know, or VP, like as a leader in marketing, you're getting inundated right now with this broad menu of different AI tools and figuring out, pulling apart the, you know, which ones really are going to help drive monumental change. That's not insignificant either. So we're doing a lot of testing and learning within our digital and our marketing ops teams over here at Simplr right now.
Yeah. And, you know, along the lines of automation and some of these other things, you know, also seeing a trend towards more self-service in the B2B world, certainly not cutting out the sales teams and that, you know, that the white glove service or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, there definitely does seem to be a trend towards more self-service that I'm seeing. And, you know, maybe that's some of the B2C stuff carrying over. What are you seeing there?
Oh my gosh, 100%. You know, the Brent Adamson came out with the Challenger methodology, and I'm probably dating myself. That's like, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when that thing first started hitting the ground. And the tenets of that was that about, you know, 60%, maybe 65% of a buyer's journey is spent without sales even engaged. That people are going online, they're searching for information, they're trying to, you know, make smart decisions before they're connecting with any humans. And I think that's only compounded, particularly with the emergence of things like ChatGPT or generative AI, and the ability then to, and the critical importance of being able to help your customers think through, how do they need to write their RFPs? How should they be, what's the buyer's guide that they should be considering as they're looking at your solutions? Or even like as they're in the solution, how should they be using it more effectively to even advance their own careers or help them think about the outcomes they're looking to drive? I think that it's not unlike you and me. I mean, when we go to buy a car, we are spending a lot of time before we're putting one foot in that showroom. And I think our customers are no different in the B2B world.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, Kristen, thanks so much for joining the show. One last question before we wrap up here. You've given a lot of great insights and advice already, but what's one recommendation that you'd have for B2B marketers to stay agile?
Honestly, this business to human thing is really important to me. I think our audiences, they're just like you. They want to read interesting things. They want to engage with unique content. And we can, all of us can kind of smell smarmy marketing and sales tactics. And so, you know, the more authenticity we can bring to the work that we're doing and the way we are talking with our customers, the better.
Yeah. Love it. Well, again, I'd like to thank Kristen Russell, Chief Marketing Officer at Simplr, for joining the show. You can learn more about Kristen and Simplr by following the links in the show notes.
Thanks again for listening to the B2B Agility Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.b2bagility.com. That's b2bagility.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile brand guides covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kilstrom on Amazon. Until next time, stay focused and stay agile.
The Agile Brand.